It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. In addition, the segment Brian Belaga and Jason Wilde. That's coming up in a few minutes. Good afternoon, Brian.
How are we doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Well, I'm great. Phenomenal.
You do understand that I have no interest to actually ask that, but people say that I should, so I do.
That's very kind.
Yeah, because I can't speak for you personally, but if I was having major problems and you ask me how I'm doing, I'm not telling you about them. Because I'm not convinced the audience for this show, which is the most important thing, really gives a hoot. So, but privately, if you needed any assistance from me, other than going to the Masters, I'm not having any much luck there. I think I'm past my prime. I don't think I have that input. But other than that, be happy to take care of you, but it doesn't need to be a part of the show. And I would hope you would view the same thing. So I can actually say, so Brian, how you doing? You can go fine. Say, Homer, how are you doing? Fine. And we've gone through that. It means nothing, but apparently it sounds good. So people think I'm rude if I don't ask.
That's the pleasantries.
Yes, you know, pleasantries.
You got to do it.
No, you don't. But I'm willing to do it. Like, you know, it's just shake hand used to be enough. Now, so, have you seen anybody? So, how you doing? Fine. Oh, how you doing? Fine. Well, thanks. Well, come on.
I don't know. I guess I just always looked at it as common courtesy.
But earlier in your life, I don't think people did that as often. I think that the desire to do that has increased, I would say, exponentially.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's all I need is an agreement. That's good enough. I get an agreement from you on anything. All right. Now, earlier this week, Mark Tauscher was on with, who was he on with,
Earl Dotson.
Earl Dotson. You've met Earl, I know.
I think I have, yes. Yeah. I think I have it at some point.
He was on the Super Bowl winning team many years ago. And he went, and I remember this, he went to Texas A&I.
Oh.
You know what Texas A&I is?
No.
Small school. I don't know. I'd never heard of it. And he stated, most people think he went. I think it is actually a small group of Texas A&M. I think you have Texas A&M and then you have Texas A&I. I'm not sure. All I know is I'd never heard of the school before, and I've really never heard of it since. He is in their Hall of Fame, which he damn well should be.
I would hope so.
I can't believe it.
I would hope so.
Yeah, because he was very good. And there were some comments that he made in the discussion that I thought were so good because I wanted to ask you to comment on them. What do we have, A? What's the first one? With Reggie White?
Yeah, we can start there.
So I think he was pretty young at the time. I don't know if he'd been on the team very long. And then this is what happened to Earl Dotson.
When I first got here, Leroy, George Koontz and Reggie White sat me down and talked to me. And they said, man, you know, you could be a great offensive lineman. You know, Reggie said, you know, I'm going to work with you. I'll tell you what you're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And like that was my mentors. And to have a guy like Reggie White tell you that, man, I grew up idolizing the guy. So it gave me confidence. You know, I came from a small school, Tauscher know this. You know, everybody think I came from A&M. I came from Texas A&I, small school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the doubt was, the years I had, I had some great years, though. You know, I was offensive player of the year. But they thought the talent I was playing
level
with.
Level of competition.
There you go. Yep. So I ain't going to lie. I came into the league thinking, well, maybe it's true, until the first day we put on pads. I'm like, I'm going to be all right.
Okay, we can stop it right there. Like, stop it there. All right. So many parts of things that I've always believed. All right. One, I believe Reggie White and those players don't do that to everyone. I believe they did that to him because they thought he could be really good and help the team. Is my theory correct?
Yeah, 100%. Reggie White wasn't sitting down every rookie and saying, I think you can be special. Sorry, or Leroy Butler. Like, it just that was not that, and it doesn't happen. I mean, it's like, well, they're going to go through every rookie that may not be good and tell them they can be great. Nope. Like,
this I would say is almost rare. Is that going too far?
You know, I don't want to say it's rare, because obviously there's talented guys that come through every year. And guys,
all right, we won't call it rare.
Yeah, guys talk to guys as they compete against them in practice and things like that. You start to notice something and pull a guy to the side and have a conversation with them. So I don't know if it's rare, but to have two Hall of Famers have that conversation with you, and the talent that Butler and obviously Reggie White were at the time, they didn't have to do that.
Right. They're thinking this guy can make us better, and he could make us better right now. So let's. And then here's my follow up, because I thought you would be one who could say that. That he goes to Texas A&I, and clearly he was really good. And I don't know why he went to Texas A&I instead of a bigger school. But when a player says, after the first day of pads, what he said, that's got to be rare.
Yeah. Now that's a little different, right? Like, he knew immediate, like, what I take from that, and I'm sure the guys around him took from that, or from seeing him, the minute they saw him, they were like, oh, whoa, like, what is that?
He showed him something.
Yes, it was probably that first initial team drill or 1v1 or 2v2 versus line, you know, run blocking station, that people were like, whoa, what where he played at A&I? What is that? Right? Like that's how I felt.
How soon did you feel what he just said he felt the first day?
It wasn't the first day for me. I think by the time I got to middle of training camp, maybe the second week of pads, I felt like, in blocking Clay every single day, I was kind of like, all right, like, Clay's really good. And I've seen Clay on tape, like in the NFL, not at USC. I could care less about that, but on NFL tape. And he's really damn good. And he makes a lot of tackles look really bad, play after play after play. And I get practices in a game, but at that time, you know, it was double days, pads every day, it felt like. And guys were rolling. It wasn't like training camp today. I mean, guys are rolling. They're going hard. Clay's in his second year. Just had a great first year. So, like, I got the best of Clay every single day. Like, I mean, every single day. And when I finally settled in and I was comfortable with the offense, or comfortable enough, and I was able to speed up my play and technique because I felt good with the offense and what I was doing every play, then it was like, okay, like, this feels a lot. Like, I feel like I can do this. If I'm doing this against Clay, I know that I can go out there and do it against other pros.
So, you know what I'd be thinking after I said that? I'm going to be rich playing in this league. They stole $13 million from me on draft day. I'm going to get all of that money back. I don't think you think like that.
That wasn't my thought my rookie year.
Okay.
Right off the get, I was kind of thinking, like, let's just continue to stay afloat here and learn day by day.
All
because,
right.
like, Because then, like, the next day, it'd be like, all right, we're installing something completely new, so turn your brain on and make sure you remember all the stuff that we learned from 2 weeks ago, but also now we're installing something new. And we'll go back to all that stuff from 2 weeks ago that you thought you were fresh on, but now it's going to be against a different look in a different situation.
Now, I want to know if you hear in this discussion between Tauscher and Dotson what it was that made it clear to others so quickly on how good he was.
I don't know if there is an offensive lineman that's been through Green Bay with a bigger punch than Earl Dotson.
Okay, stop right there. Because that's what you taught me. I never – a bigger punch, that would show people immediately, right? That punch or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, again, we're talking about different eras of football, right? Like,
yeah, whatever you say.
It's the punch in that point in time in the NFL. Like, today's game is different. Like, it just is.
You can't do that today, or they don't do it as well?
You just don't do it against today's DNs. Like, it's just, you don't, it's not a huge punch every single time. It's single hand.
They're too quick, or what's changed?
Yeah. I think that's the profile of the player has changed completely. Okay. They're not, like, listen, for as great, and I mean great, as Reggie White was, he was a big target to hit. So you could, and that's the only really way to slow down massive targets and big men like that, mm-hmm. is you have to stop their force somewhere and get their pads to pop up so that you can then handle that size, right?
And that's what Earl Dotson would have done, right?
Yes, 100%. To stop Reggie White, if you just think you're going to set back and just let that man run at you, you are out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind.
But now they're smaller, quicker, more Micah Parsons. You can't do that.
Yeah, the body type has changed.
Okay.
Like, right, you're looking at guys like sure, you have your Myles Garrett. That's an absolute Greek god, right? Like, that's how he's sculpted out. But his hands are so good. And then you have the profiles like Micah and like when Von Miller was at his prime. Like, those guys are so fast with their hands, so good with their hands. If you throw a two-hand punch at him, he's swatting that. He's timing that. He's seeing it. He's swatting it from a mile away, and your hands are going down, and he's around you. So it's more about timing and patience.
But if I had Earl or Dotson on with you, I think he would say, Brian, you're right. I'd figure it out. I'd figure out something, but maybe that's – you can't.
He was a great player. He'd probably figure it out. But that approach that he took, I guarantee he would change his approach.
Okay.
Like, just – player to player, game to game, if you just go in and do the same exact thing over and over and over again, the guys study tape too.
All
right. Like they study tape on you unless they just can't adjust. And to me, you know, you look at a guy like Dotson and his size and strength, the minute you get hit with one of those haymakers, It's stopping the D end in his tracks. It's, like I said, popping his pads up, and then he's able to get his bear paws on you, and it's essentially done.
All right, let's hear the whole thing. I interrupted A and didn't let him finish. So now I want you to hear the whole thing, Tauscher and Dotson. Then we'll get a final thought before we break for the top segment of the day, Brian Bulaga and Jason Wilde.
I don't know if there is an offensive lineman that's been through Green Bay with a bigger punch than Earl Dotson. I
demonstrated
so
on the couch.
We didn't do the pads, and Earl and I would be doing our drills. And I always, God, Earl's punch is, you're not going to do it anymore. Earl's punch is Hall of Fame good, man. It is unbelievable. And I'm guessing even with his sleeked out frame now, that punch is still there.
Hey,
and I could have messed with it, but
I used to always tell you, hey, if you shock them right off the ball, they'd have lost everything they was thinking about.
Just as you said.
Yep, exactly. It's exactly right. Listen, I know how.
Did you have drills with another offensive lineman? Were they wowed you or impressed you the way Tauscher was talking about Dotson and the punch?
Oh, yeah. I mean, guys, there were guys, when you did all your individual drills, it'd be offensive line on offensive line and like those punching drills and hand placement drills and things like that. you'd get to see how a guy works.
What did Bakhtiari do that was so impressive?
Well, Dave's first year, and he'll self-admit this, it was very awkward. Like, he was a very awkward mover. He wasn't, I don't think he was comfortable yet in his own size and frame and what he had to do. I mean, he went out there and did good for what was expected of him at left tackle, but it wasn't until his second year when he had time to then adapt to what happened in year one and go to year two, and you started seeing how good his hand placement was and how good he was after his first initial punch, or not even punch, where he placed his hands, how his feet then adjusted to it to get ready for a redirect, right? Like for the secondary rush.
I need you to give us a junior, right? We have the hand placement after the feet and after the initial rush.
Yeah, I saw that early in his second year. Like, I'm like, that's really good. Like, that's really clean.
Did you go, like, where did this come from? Why did?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was still, I was able to give him crap all through his career because he was younger than I was. But, like, I remember getting done with a practice, and I was like, dude, whatever you did, it worked. It looked great. Moving great. Like, you look like a completely different guy than last season. Yeah.
All right. I could do this forever, but we got Jason Wilde. And when you have your own Jason Wilde Yingling hotline, we can't be late. Wilde and the Doc next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
It is the Doctor of Football, Brian Bulaga, along with the man who, three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, has his own Yingling Hotline, the Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline. Take it away, Doc.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
Are you sick of me yet, Brian?
No. No.
Okay.
Not at all. Not at all.
All right. I kept you for like 45 minutes yesterday, and today we did a charitable endeavor that you have no need or requirement to do, but you did it anyway for your old buddy Corey Linsley and for me, and now you got to talk to me again. I appreciate you tolerating. Paula doesn't even want this much of me bothering.
No, I was happy to do it. That's always a fun little thing that you guys do for CASA. I enjoy doing it. It's fun. Never know what questions you may get, so that's why I enjoy it.
It's true. You were very nimble. You did a great job.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, I kind of mentioned it to you on your show, but do you remember a season? You could probably guess maybe 2014, maybe that was a year that there were guesses about it. But do you remember a Packers season that they were favored in that many games out of a schedule, 13? Like, do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't, and I don't do a great job of keeping track of that. Obviously, right? Like, I'm more, I can remember stupid things like the 2014 offensive line had one guy miss one game, and it was you against the Jets in week two, and then he came back on a torn MCL in a week, basically. I remember stuff like that, but when it comes to, like, favored, I would just say this. Your 2011 team had some pretty damn high expectations and lived up to them until you didn't, right?
Yep.
And in 14, I think there was a feeling – I don't know about going into the season, but certainly, after Rodgers dropped the relax, because that was 2014, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
It was clear you were a really good team. There are other years where we were maybe skeptical of how good you were, and we thought, well, things have got to fall into place for them. And in 2016, when you guys started slow out of the gate and then Rodgers did the run the table deal. Like, yeah, you ran into a buzzsaw in Atlanta that time, and they exacted their revenge for what you guys did to them in 2010. But you guys, you guys had no business being in that game, right? You guys put it all together. Phenomenal game in Dallas. So, like, I'm so perplexed by this coming season. Like, I just don't know what, like, I can expect whatever I choose to expect, but I have no idea how close I'll be to being right. Like, I can see
I can help you out here, Jason. I'm with you. What do you need to know? I can tell you they're going to be good, but not that good. What?
Like, I can see a version of them that stays really healthy, like that 2014 team. You know, they who did you guys lose in 14? And was it Barnett? Was Barnett still there? Or Clay moved to the inside? Or Bishop? Yep. Somebody got hurt. Clay moved to inside linebacker and went to the Pro Bowl still at a position he didn't want to play. But other than that, like, you guys were really healthy that year. And, you know, Julius was there. And, you know, I can see a way for this team.
This team has no chance to be 12-4. None.
Yeah, again, you and your none. I don't agree. Like,
okay, Aaron Rodgers. Who's the replacement for Aaron Rodgers? Who's the replacement for Davante Adams? Who's the replacement for Randall Cobb? Who's the replacement for David Bakhtiari? I don't need to go any further. Come on, Jason. Yeah. Doc, set him straight.
Well, I didn't say it was a likely path.
It was – I think what Jason's trying to say is, and there's he's making, to me at least, a good point. The team completely healthy on paper – to me, looks like they could win 12 games, in my opinion. Like, if that team stays healthy, yes, I think they have the talent in the starting group to win 12 games. There's no doubt.
Excuse me, Doc. Can I quote a Brian Bulaga? Do you want to know the offensive line, what you've said about your concerns of this offensive line?
Yes.
Do I need to tell you that offensive line? Bakhtiari, Sitton, Lindsley, Lang, Bulaga.
All right. No one is saying that this group is that. In fact, if I'd have been permitted to finish my thought.
Sorry.
Which wasn't.
I'll get back on the cot. My mistake.
You don't have to go on the cot. Just let me finish, and then you can critique my position. What I was trying to say was I can see a path for them to 13-4, but I can just as easily, if they have the if their offensive line is as – not as bad as I think it's going to be, but as bad as you would fear it to be. Like, at center, Sean Ryan doesn't make a meaningful jump. At right guard, Belton is about the same as he was last year, which was good for a rookie, but not good enough. If Jordan Morgan, who, you know, Joe Thomas was saying today, that he watched him a little bit when he went to that phase two practice the other day. He said he's got great feet, and I've heard Brian say that too. But great feet is not like you got to have. Like Brian Bulaga had excellent feet and those darn short arms of his. But you know what else he had? He had a huge high IQ, football IQ, and he would always, much like the guy that played the position before him. Even if he didn't have his fastball that day, even if he wasn't on top of his game, he always found a way to get the job done, right? And, yes, am I tempted to make a joke about Bruce Irvin? Because you know why I bring up Bruce Irvin? Because he's the only guy I ever saw actually get the better of Brian Bulaga more than, like, on one snap at a game. Like, it's really hard to play tackle in the league, and we just don't know if – Jordan Morgan can or can't. And so when I say I see a path to 13-4, that also entails him playing left tackle at an extremely high level where they don't have to slide a lot of protection his way and help him out a lot. But I also see a path where they're like 9-8, 8-9. And the other reason why I see a path to 13-4, if everything falls right and they stay healthy, is because I do believe the schedule makers did them a solid. Like, they don't have any really brutal turnarounds. Like, I would actually argue that having your bye week split kind of the way it's been split with that, you know, Thanksgiving Eve game and everything else, I actually think that's pretty good. Like, you don't have a full bye, but you have, like, two kind of – they're more than just a mini bye, right? One's, like, 9 days and one's, like, 10 days. So you don't have the 14 days, but I'd take that over some of the alternatives. So that's what I'm saying is that I can argue on this program right now that they're going to go 8-9, and I think I can do a pretty good convincing job of it. I can argue on this very same program at the very same time that they could go 13-4, and I think I can do a pretty decent job of it. But I just don't feel confident in either of those opinions, and to me, that's the challenge.
Yeah, because I think it to me, it depends on what we've talked about, offensive line. I mean, we'll say that, but I think it also depends on defensive line and what happens opposite of Micah and how does that group perform? Like, to me, that's the biggest thing. Like, those are – it's going to sound so cliche, but to me, it's what happens at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball that's going to determine how this season goes. And I understand, like, we want to talk about quarterback and this and the receivers and Tucker Kraft and they are going to play – like, obviously, Jordan Love is a very, 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 very important part of this puzzle. I get it. But I still feel that what the offensive and defensive line's role in this season is going to be the makeup of it. If those two groups excel, this thing could go in a really good direction. If one side struggles or they suffer injuries or things like that, we saw how that went. We saw exactly how that went last year. So, to me
– yeah.
That's where it's at.
So, right, and I'm glad you did that because I was thinking on the offensive side, and I never really even reached the point of talking about the defensive side. But let's take, again, best case scenario, like Javon Hargrave is the same guy he was the last time he played for Jonathan Gannon, even though it was like 4 years ago, right? Worst case scenario, he busts his chin strap, as we like to say. But, like, he had a year a couple years ago where he tore his pec or tore his triceps, and he didn't play. He played, like, four games. Devontae Wyatt, you like him when he's healthy. So do I. Problem is, the last 2 years, he's had significant injuries, and 2 years ago he came back and played, but played poorly, right? Last year he was just done for the year. So how good is he? We know Micah Parsons is special. But, like, you're an Iowa guy. I don't root against in any way Lucas Van Ness. But I didn't think he'd get the fifth-year option until Goody said during the offseason, and I should have been more on top of it, but he flat-out said, this isn't based on what he's done. It's based on what we think he'll do. Well, that's you admitting that you don't know what he'll do. You're hoping he'll do what you are paying him to do. But – again, we don't have a preponderance of evidence of how good he is going to be for them. The other guys that are behind Micah and LVN are all projections. Like, I like Baron Sorrell. I have no evidence that he can be like an 8-sack, 40-pressure guy. I don't have that evidence about Colin Oliver. I've seen a few moments from Brenton Cox, but I don't know about that. And then, you know, the draft class, the other thing about this team, I know you don't want to rely on your draft class to have huge roles on a year-in, year-out basis, but with only six guys and one of them a kicker, like, I don't know who among them is going to have an impact right away. And if there are injuries, you're going to need a couple of them at whatever positions those injuries occur to be able to step in. And I don't know if they're capable of that. There's just so many I don't knows. And, you know, we can joke all we want about Rodgers and the Steelers, and I don't follow that team closely enough to know their depth chart. But I'll tell you this, back when you were playing with number 12, we could do this all day, but we would still come to the end of, hey, they got Rodgers. That's all that matters. Like, they'll figure the rest out. And Jordan has not reached the point where I can say, well, they've got Jordan. they'll figure the rest out.
Yep. I'm with you on that. Like, as much as I like Jordan Love, I think he can, like, Homer and I talked about this on Monday. Like, I think he's in that very good tier. But when you mention Aaron Rodgers, he was in the elite tier. And when you have that tier of quarterback, that's he can solve a lot of your problems.
And he still only got to one Super Bowl in how many years?
Homer needs to hear what Dorsey Levin said at that event.
Yeah,
what
did Dorsey say?
Well, here's a guy who played in three Super Bowls.
I agree. I know who Dorsey Levin's is. Thanks.
Yeah, it's well. I know you know that.
But what did he say? Because I'm going to disagree
with you today.
I don't know.
What is with you? You're very interruptive. I feel like Greta Van Susteren.
All right. I'll turn my mic off.
Go ahead. What he said. No, this will be brief. What he said. He got a question from somebody about should we be unhappy that the Packers didn't get more Super Bowls with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback? And he basically said, you know how effing hard it is to get to the Super Bowl? Do you know how many things have to go your way no matter how good your team is? Like, Brian Bulaga was a fantastic player. Went to the Super Bowl as a rookie. Youngest guy to ever start a Super Bowl. And how many Super Bowls did you make it to after that, Brian?
Fortunately, none.
And it wasn't because you sucked or the quarterback sucked or the coach sucked. It's always something, right? And you never know what that thing is going to be. It can be the one I always like to use. It can be cutting a third string tight end in October, right, in Ryan Taylor. And that ends up being the difference between whether you go to the damn Super Bowl or not. Because Ryan Taylor, earlier in the season or earlier in his career, he tells the story better than I do. He decided to be a hero and try and field an onside kick when he was only supposed to be blocking so the guy behind him could field the onside kick. And he did that, and he got his ass chewed out to beat the band. And who would have been on the field in front of Jordy Nelson instead of Brandon Bostic if he had not been released? Ryan Taylor. Do we really think he would have made the same mistake a second time after getting reamed out when he did it in a game that didn't have a Super Bowl berth on the line? No, we do not. And if that play, there's 10 plays in that game that are the difference between you going to the Super Bowl or not. And if that one play is the only one we change, you're in the Super Bowl. I don't know if you win it or not, but you are. And that's my point, is that we could say, and they only made it to one Super Bowl with a great quarterback. Yeah, because it's not just the great quarterback, and all it takes are those stupid little fluky things that when they cut Ryan Taylor in October, if you would have told Ted, hey, this is going to cost you the Super Bowl, Ted would have been like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? But that's exactly what it did.
Yeah, I wish you'd have said the quarterback's not that important. There's only one thing that's important. There's only one thing that's at the top of the list, and it's not quarterback.
Luck.
No, defense. Every year since 1965 that they've won a championship, they've been first or second in points given up, other than Lombardi's last year when they were third. There's way too much discussion about the quarterback. This is over 60 years. I wish Dorsey would say what he should say.
The
quarterback?
Packers?
Yes, the Packers.
No. Yeah. Well, who cares? Take all the Super Bowl champions. There's plenty of them that didn't have defense.
It could easily be different given the weather, given the nature of Green Bay. What Dorsey Levens needs to say, and you said, the quarterback's not that important. I don't care if he's the greatest quarterback ever. If your defense isn't good enough in Green Bay, you ain't getting a ring.
2014 The 2014 defense in the second half of that season was undeniably good.
I didn't say second half. That's a
new
stat.
When they moved Clay inside. That's when they played Julius Peppers more.
Well,
absolutely was good enough.
Okay.
No, don't just go based on the stat sheet and the rankings.
For 60 years.
How was that defense playing?
All right, 2014.
Just regarding the Packers.
2014 for the Packers, they were 13th. They were great offensively first. They were 13th in points given up. I don't know the last half of the season.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Clearly not, but the stats for 60 years. Vince Lombardi couldn't win without
not,
a defense
it's
that
not
good.
For 60 years, it's for just the Super Bowl teams that the Packers had. There's plenty of other Super Bowl teams that don't fit your paradigm, you crazy old man.
That's true. Well, when it happens differently in Green Bay, talk to me.
Okay. I'll just probably end up talking to you on Tuesday like I always do.
Well, you come up with a better reason why they only won one Super Bowl each with Favre and Rodgers. In the year those guys each won it.
It's always a different reason, that's why.
It was the year that they were first or second.
You're ruining the clock. All right, you guys got to go.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, I did. I interrupted too much, which is hard to say that that's at a standard different than normally. No, I don't. That was the Jason Woolley Yingling hotline. It's hard to believe that one thing could explain the Green Bay Packers. Different things occurred in those seasons. There were injuries in 2010 to a number of players, but even with the injuries, second in the league in points given up, 15 a game.
Yeah. I mean, Jason would agree with it too. We all, everyone's on board, and I was obviously on board when we started talking about this on Monday. It's a massive part. It's a massive part having a defense of that quality. Like, it's an absolute, but you don't get to Super Bowls with bad defenses. That's not what Jason
said.
And
I would say in 2010, the defense bailed out the offense even at the end of that game in the Super Bowl. What did the offense need to do? And they couldn't get a first down or something, and it gave Pittsburgh the ball again, right?
Yeah. I believe we did.
Yep. Bailed them out even when you win the Super Bowl. I don't know if that's the proper way to put it. Do you feel like the defense bailed you out? Probably not.
I think it was pretty complimentary.
Okay.
In that game. Right. I think we played a complimentary game, in all honesty.
Yeah, I think so over the course of the game, but at the end, when the offense, which was very good, could have finished the deal, they couldn't.
No, yeah.
And the defense made the plays.
They did, for sure.
All right, Milwaukee weight loss. Jason and I wouldn't argue about that. I did it because other people have done it, and they said, Homer, it's almost easy. I said, it can't be that good. And it is. Milwaukee weight loss, there's nothing special. They don't have counting calories, no prepackaged meals, no. Don't need to take a pill, anything. You eat less, and you're okay eating less, and that means you lose weight like I have, 26 pounds. I could go to 30 if I want. Just I eat less, and I'm okay eating less. You have a program you do for a couple of months, and then you change and add a little bit, but it's as simple as that. Can you eat less and be happy eating less? You can with MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com, 262-235-3980, 262-235-3980. Get a free consultation, and they'll tell you the specifics. But I'm telling you, I'm not the first one. I did this because I couldn't believe it was even close to easy. And I'm glad to say I was wrong. Milwaukee weight loss, 262-235-3980, down 26. I can get to 30, but I'm happy with the weight I am. I eat less, and I'm happy eating less. Fine with it. Next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and yes, I did interrupt too much. I don't even want to listen to the tape on the Jason Wilde Yingling hotline, but I was hoping for better from Dorsey Lovins. First thing every fan needs to know, defense is, a quarterback's not as important as you think. It's important, and to have a good team, it's important. Peyton Manning won 2 Super Bowls. And the second one he won, he wasn't any good. Didn't matter. Found a good defense. Brett Favre, difference between the year they won and the didn't win, the second year the defense wasn't as good. I'm sure Jason will have some great stats for me for other teams. I don't care about other teams. The Green Bay Packers. I've got to go back to 1961 and 62. I'm sure they were best in the league. I know they were in 62. That was the best Packer team ever, and it's not even close. Hard to believe how dominant they were. We'll get back to the doc. Brian Bulaga, do we have him on the screen? We do. Oh, my screen's just restarting. Can you say, even when the quarterbacks are great, a quarterback's not that important, or is that not Because they are important, but how you tell us how you think a quarterback should be looked at in assessing winning championships.
I think it's important. I think the quarterback has to be good and above to win a quarter to win a Super Bowl.
Good and above, yeah, I like that.
You know, I think that's kind of where it needs to be. If he's an average QB in today's NFL, that's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
It just won't work. In
good and
NFL.
Above. And Jordan Love, right now, he doesn't have to get any better. He's good and above.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's got that covered. So then it comes down to what do you surround that quarterback with?
Yeah.
And right? I mean, I'm not taking a shot at Sam Darnold, but Sam Darnold, I think, is a good quarterback and was surrounded by elite level talent offensively and defensively, and look what they were able to do.
And yet they needed him for one game. He had to be good and above for one game.
Yep. And he was.
And he was.
And I think that's the level that quarterbacks have to be able to play that, like that, to that level when called upon.
Yeah, you're right.
Especially in playoffs. They got to be able to go in and be like, yeah, I can have a day where I can throw for 350 and four touchdowns and get it done. But we're not saying you do that every time, but you could easily do that.
But if the defense is really good, I don't have to do that, and I don't need to try to do that.
No, not ever. No, you don't have to do that every game. No.
With the discussion with Jason, when he brought up 2014,
yep.
And your discussion about the offensive line, David Bakhtiari, Josh Sitton, Corey Linsley, TJ Lang, and Brian Bulaga. I don't want to even take time to compare that offensive line to the current one.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's
not close.
Yeah. And like, I exclude myself from it because I don't like talking about myself, but you just look at those four guys alone.
And at wide receiver, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams. Come on!
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers in quarterback, and Eddie Lacy. Like, I think I was right. That was the year you guys were number one in the league in points scored that year.
Yes, I think we were.
That's incredible. 30 points a game.
It's laughable. I mean, it's funny. I mean, you look at that offense, and like, listen, there's very talented pieces on this. You can't compare apples to apples.
I mean, I was going to ask you 2011, you were at 35 points, but this was pretty close to that offense, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes, it was very close to that offense. And you know, you look at things that, like, you look at 2011 and you lose the game in, you know, at home against the Giants. But, like, the 2014 game or the 2014 season, as bad as the Seattle loss was and how I felt that we were the better team, they ended up winning the game. So, clearly, you know, they were the winner and went on the Super Bowl. The thing that did that in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, was losing in Buffalo and losing the one seed to Seattle.
Yeah.
That's what – because I truly believe if Seattle comes to Green Bay, I feel like the story goes different.
You don't lose. You won't say it the way I'll say it. You don't lose. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And, like, so I know a lot of people look at the playoff or the NFC Championship game, and believe me, as do I. Don't get me wrong. But you got to look at the events that lead up to that, right? Like, and that Buffalo game is one of those that, and if you go back and watch the game, there's moments in that game where we should have pulled away, and we should have been out of there, win by at least 10 points. And hey, it wasn't pretty, but we got it done, and we're moving on, and we're going to Tampa next week, and hopefully we can see.
Then you come home, you win the Super Bowl, and Jason doesn't have to listen to me talk about the importance of first or second in defense. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home at Franklin, family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. And they still own the business. The Fiscos still own Fisco Auto Body, and they're still working on cars Imagine how many years they've been doing it. Expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco on Forest Home in Franklin. You'll like them. And eventually you say, Homer, I think I need to thank you. Fisco, 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 to remember the name. Fourth quarter next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Founded by inventors, fueled by community, and focused on business for 130 years, Horicon Bank has helped Wisconsin businesses grow, doing banking differently since 1896. Think of commercial lending. Today, the same local approach, now part of the Milwaukee business community, bringing decision-making closer to the people who matter most. You. Financing requests approved in days, not weeks. Bankers who understand your business. Products designed to support real cash flow needs. Because when it comes to commercial lending, Horicon Bank gets the job done. Together, doing good for 130 years. Hard to believe we're late, but we will have, and Brian Bulaga deserves it, ESPN National in progress. The Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Aaron Rodgers, what is the most accurate? You ready, Doc?
Yep.
One of the greatest quarterbacks ever. Two, best Green Bay quarterback. Three, it's a tie, star Rodgers and Favre. Or four, a complicated fellow. And Brian Bulaga, his pick. Between one, two, three, or four?
One of the greatest of all time.
There it is. One of the greatest quarterbacks ever, says Brian Bulaga. I vote it's a tie, star, Rodgers, and Favre. The other choice is best Green Bay quarterback and complicated fellow, honoring the former president of the Green Bay Packers who said that. And we didn't talk about it, but it's just impossible to understand. Kyle Busch, the great NASCAR driver, passes away at the age of 41. It's just on the 10th, he radioed to his crew requesting medical aid from a doctor and a shot after the race. He had been struggling with a sinus cold that was exacerbated by the intense G-forces and elevation changes, but his family said he was hospitalized with severe illness. They announced earlier today, and he passed away there. And there has to be more information.
Yeah.
41. How?
Very sad. But.
Yeah, no, it's... Come on.
I know.
Little sick. Now dead?
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. That is the Doc Brian Bulaga. And yes, he's so good, it's ESPN National. Everybody together now in progress.